say hello to a new friend on an old road. Take a two-lane trip of memories into mysteries unknown. Come along for the ride. Jim Hinckley's America. Jim Hinckley's America.
Hey, good morning, my friends. It is a beautiful day here in Kingman, Arizona. Sitting here at within spitting distance of legendary Route 66. It is a wonderful 54 degrees right now. It's going to be up around 75 degrees before the end of the day. Perfect weather for a grand adventure and a road trip. And speaking of road trips, we've got Reese Martin with us today, whose exploits are, well, almost legendary. Hey, Reese, how are you doing today?
Hey, good morning, Jim. Thanks very much for having me. A little tired today. We had some severe weather in Oklahoma last night that kept us up late, but we made it through okay.
No serious damage, I hope.
No, not up here. There's some towns a little further south in Oklahoma that weren't so lucky, waking up to a lot of damage down there. But up here in northeast Oklahoma, we fared pretty well.
Oh, Reese, I'm so sorry to hear that. God, I'm glad everybody's okay up at your end, but I'm still sorry to hear that.
Yeah, the town of Sulphur seems to have been hit pretty hard. They're right in their downtown. Haven't really seen any reports of any casualties or anything like that, but, you know, we were very well warned. You know, it's always amazing to me. You know, I grew up here, and so seeing the way our weathermen treat the weather and the abilities they have to drill down to street level is amazing, especially when I go to some other parts of the country where people aren't so lucky to have all that technology. We had adequate warning, and we're well prepared yesterday. So far, so good.
Very good. Well, God bless. You know, it's part of, we all have a different things. You know, California, they get the coffee cups to rattling on a regular basis. And unfortunately, you folks out there in the plains, tornadoes are one of the curses that you have to put up with out there.
Yeah, I mean, and there's been some discussion online the last couple of days with, you know, everyone talking about the weather. I know Nebraska had some pretty bad tornadoes in Iowa and some other places. And you know, that's one of the reasons that we added a whole bunch of information in our trip guide that kind of tells travelers, hey, here's how you stay weather aware. Here's where you can find more information, you know, because especially if you're not from this part of the country or not from this part of the world, it's very intimidating, but knowledge is power.
Yeah. You know, I wanted to mention that. I'm really glad that you put that in the route guide because that shows a couple things. One, it provides a valuable service to travelers on Route 66 in Oklahoma, but it also shows the attention to detail and why, in my opinion, Oklahoma's leading the pack as far as Route 66 promotion, marketing, and really seeming to have a heart for this.
Thank you. It's a lot of work. I'm lucky that we have a pretty strong board here in Oklahoma that's very supportive and has a lot of good ideas and a good volunteer base. So, you know, we're also one of the lucky states that has some support at the state level. And so it feels nice when everybody's kind of swimming in the same direction for the most part.
It does. You know, I don't know what I would do if I ran into something like that where everybody's rowing the boat in the same direction. It seems like it almost takes the fun out of things. But you folks, boy, I tell you, Reese, and it's a team effort. I know that you're at the helm of the Route 66 Association, but it's definitely a team effort. And that's another situation with you, your wife Sam, and others have a real talent for building a network of cooperative partnerships. And that's being manifest all along the Route 66 corridor now in Oklahoma.
Yeah, I agree. I'm also the chair of the State Association Working Group, the Road Ahead Partnership. So every
yes,
I lead a call where we have representatives from the different state associations, so we can, even if it's just, hey, what's going on in your state, you know, we're aware of kind of the difficulties, the celebrations, the everything. So, you know, right now with the centennial coming up, it's been really handy to say, hey, I heard from this guy that's doing a board game. What do you guys think about it? Or, you know, hey, someone approached us with this other thing. And so we can, again, kind of talk about these things as a group, as a, in, instead of just being siloed.
Well, you know, I've been married for over 40 years, and I have learned that good communication. You got to sit down and visit and talk, and that's one of the foundations. That's the key to what you're doing, and doing it successfully, is having that open communication with folks. Yeah, you just had a meeting of the Road Ahead Initiative out in California. Was that pretty informative? Mr. Reese?
Did it mute me?
It did, but that's okay. You're back now.
The app gave me some kind of message, and I ignored it. So the Road Ahead Partnership meets, you know, quarterly, usually virtually, but we do meet once a year in person, which is great. There's no substitute for getting in person and visiting. So our meeting that we had out in Claremont, California, was at the beginning of April, was kind of a review. You know, the partnership has been together for about 7 years or so officially. And it was a review of our mission and how are we executing that mission? And do we need to make any adjustments to the things that we're doing? And so it was just a really good, productive conversation of kind of seeing the things that we've done as a group and the things we want to do as a group and make sure that we're moving towards those goals.
Very good. You know, one of the problems we have, and you folks there in Oklahoma, specifically Tulsa, have done a great job at fixing this. We have sold and marketed Route 66 as America's longest small town, and we've done that well. But unfortunately, people don't think of the big cities like the Los Angeles metro area. They overlook that. The traffic, the crime, real, perceived, and they have a tendency to miss those places. And the work you're doing in Tulsa has gone a long way to change that perception that the big cities are a part of Route 66. They are a part of the linear community, and they are very much a part of small town America.
Right. You know, and for many years when people were traveling Route 66, they'd get to Tulsa and just stay on the interstate and skip past it. And there's a couple of reasons for that. Part of it is, you know, especially if you're from out of the country, you get used to these smaller towns. And so you get to a place like Tulsa, and especially if the signage isn't great, you just think, gosh, that's a little intimidating, and I'll keep going. And especially if there's not some big thing that you're like, I absolutely have to see this. And Tulsa, again, like you said earlier, it's been such a huge team effort. It's come from the city investing in Route 66 with several grant programs and like an actual master plan done by the city planners to help develop the road, to encouraging business development. You know, having something like Buck Adam in Tulsa is fantastic because people see it online, they see pictures and say, I absolutely have to see that. And when they do, and they stay on 66 instead of avoiding town, they see everything else they would have missed because of misconceptions, because of, you know, lack of knowledge, you know, all this kind of stuff. So, I mean, it takes a lot of things to do that. And you're right. You know, St. Louis, you know, someone may just hop off and do Ted Drews if they don't know any better. But there's so much to see there. And with Los Angeles, something Scott Petrowski, the president of the California Association, I've talked about several times, is, you know, you get to the edge of the greater Los Angeles sprawl. And, you know, sometimes the communities don't do a great job of getting the word out about what exactly they have. People are tired at the end of the road. They don't want to handle the stoplights. You know, there's all kinds of reasons for it, which means it's going to take all kinds of solutions to help get around that. But and the hope is that the centennial helps wake some folks up in these communities that haven't been giving Route 66 much attention to kind of overcome those obstacles.
Well, you know, and you folks there in Oklahoma, you've been working towards this centennial since about 2018, I suppose. Been quite a while.
Yeah, it felt good to kind of be out of the gate pretty early with it. Now, that being said, I mean, as I'm sure you well know, the wheels of government turn very slowly. So even though our centennial commission here in the state was put together pretty early, you know, there are some aspects of it that are still, you know, dealing with the normal red tape you have to deal with whenever you have any kind of government involvement. And I mean, there's good reason for some of that. You want to make sure money's going to the right places and things like that. But you also have a lot of voices at the table, and you have to listen to all of those voices and make sure that everyone agrees with the direction that's going forward. So I know every state is dealing with different versions of that. But even if it's, you know, when someone like the lieutenant governor comes to town and says, hey, this is really important, we need to invest in Route 66, a lot of people listen. Whereas if I show up, they're like, well, who are you? So again, it kind of goes back to what I said earlier about it. It's just nice to have people swimming in the same direction so that, you know, we hopefully will get to our destination in time. Cause it's, I mean, the centennial is on the doorstep now.
You know, it always amazes me when I speak on tourism and economic development issues. I'm surprised by some of the communities along the Route 66 corridor that still don't, they haven't grasped the potential for economic development, for historic district revitalization represented by Route 66. The centennial is creating an awakening, but now I have a concern that some people are becoming myopic. They're seeing the centennial as the destination instead of the centennial as the end of chapter one and the beginning of chapter two.
Yeah, I hear you. And that's a very important thing to keep an eye on, because it is about the next 100 years. It's not just about 2026. You know, that's really the kickoff to whatever comes next. And I'm really happy that the state of Oklahoma, the legislature here, was able to pass basically creating a separate commission that is technically not for the centennial, that is allocating $6.6 million a year for economic development projects in Route 66 communities. And I don't know if it's formally been signed yet, but I know the legislature here has been working to remove the sunset clause on that legislation. It was going to go through 2027 and then stop. A lot of the legislators and folks here in Oklahoma have said, you know what, this is important to continue, not just to stop once the centennial gets here. You know, that'll be a huge game changer. There's already been several pretty big projects funded by the first round of that grant. And if that money continues to be available for a while into the future, that'll transform the whole corridor, not just for the centennial, but again, for the next 100 years.
Well, you know, we were talking about the big cities, and you know, people have probably heard me say this more than once, probably tired of hearing me say this, but I do have trouble with any town more than three stoplights. But you know, Tulsa has really changed my perspective on that a lot. And I also have to give credit to Scott Piotrowski out there. He drugged me into downtown LA a few times, and I've learned how to navigate and get through there. And boy, I tell you, you're really missing the boat if you don't get out and explore. And what you're doing along the Route 66 corridor in Tulsa, boy, I tell you, it's impressive.
I'm really happy with how much the city has embraced Route 66, especially considering for so many years we just totally missed the boat, and people, you know, here didn't really pay attention to it. It was just 11th Street or Admiral. And so to look at it now is really night and day. But the key really is to say, hey, you know, if Tulsa can do it, other communities can do it too, whether it's through official programs like the Neon Grant we have here, or the Facade Grant, or just seeing that, you know, promoting the fact that these businesses that either open on 66 or relocate to 66 from somewhere else in town see a positive movement for their business being there, being part of that community, like you mentioned, and encouraging others. It's been great to see some businesses that have been in Tulsa for 30, 40 years move from their longtime locations to Route 66 because they want to be a part of, you know, just that special community.
Well, you know, you've got some pretty interesting long-term businesses there. Downtown. Let's see, you've got a great chili place that's been there for a while.
Ike's Chili, oldest restaurant in Oklahoma. It was founded, I believe it's 1 year after statehood. And with their original location downtown, even Will Rogers would go and have chili and visit with folks at the lunch counter. They moved to Route 66 a couple of years ago, and that's probably the poster child example of a business that was fairly well established, been around for quite a long time, that said, you know what, we want to, you know, move to Route 66 because they've really got something special going on over there.
Yeah, that's a great place to stop and do some eating. Yeah. I tell you, you know, a lot of what you've done there, the Blue Dome District and, of course, the Meadow Gold sign, your Neon Sign Initiative program there in Tulsa is another great example. And I think communities could plagiarize that and use that for a template for some development in their communities. In fact, you've got a lot of programs in Tulsa that people could plagiarize and use as a template.
Yeah, I'm very thankful that Citizens of Tulsa approved a vision program to dedicate some money to that, to the Tulsa Route 66 Commission, which is the group that put that grant together. And so for those that aren't familiar, it's a 50% matching grant with a maximum of $10,000. So that if someone on 66 wants to refurbish an old sign that's been dark for a while or add a new one, they can apply for that and get a grant to get that sign built. And we've had, we're approaching 60 signs actually turned on Route 66, both the new and old alignment here, that have been made possible because of this grant. I mean, there's the newest one is a giant rooftop sign downtown in the Blue Dome District for Santa Fe Square, which is just a huge development. And granted, our little $10,000 grant was a drop in the bucket compared to, you know, this gigantic sign, but it helped. And we're just happy that people see value in it and that it has continued now for several years.
Oh, very good. Yeah, it looks like I've got a lot to see on this trip. I'm coming back for the AAA Route 66 Road Fest in June, I think 22nd, 23rd. And I'll have to, I had to skip Tulsa on the last trip for a number of reasons, including cows in the road. That's a story I'll share in another day, but there's a lot for me to see and catch up on in Tulsa. That's for sure. Connie Loveland has a question. Connie Loveland is a Main Street director out in Tucumcari for folks who aren't aware. And she is one of the driving forces there in the community for revitalization. She has a question for you. She's asking how you created the relationship with your state representatives to help bring awareness about the economic importance of Route 66.
That's a really great question. Hey, Connie, thank you very much for that. I mean, part of it is actually Main Street related. When Tulsa started to really invest in Route 66, we have four Main Street organizations in the city limits, two of which are directly on Route 66. And so that helped because with having a strong state Main Street director, when they were able to see the specific development in these communities, they were able to tie that into Route 66. And that kind of got into the halls of government here where, maybe they hadn't been paying close attention. But I really have to say the biggest part of that is the fact that we had a champion in state government with our lieutenant governor. Again, he would go in and talk to legislators and say how important Route 66 is to economic development. And they'd listen to him. Sorry about that. So when that started, that kind of opened the door. So then when I started asking questions of our legislators, there was just some general awareness of Route 66 and what it meant to each of their communities. And that's still where it comes back to, even though, you know, you have someone like the Lieutenant Governor being out there being a cheerleader for Route 66. When I'm able to sit down with these legislators and say, hey, Miami, Oklahoma is one of your communities. This investment has led it to this. This is the impact that we're seeing from these travelers. You know, here's a, you know, look at this guest book of all these people that have come from all over the world and stopped at the Coleman Theater. And that's because Route 66 brings these people here. Sometimes it takes knocking on that door a few times for them to really sit down and for it to sink in. So I would say persistence. And then we also got lucky in just having some advocates at a high level that both with the Main Street organization here in Tulsa or here in Oklahoma and with the Lieutenant Governor that got some of these legislators to kind of stop and listen. Whereas, you know, if they stopped and listened to this stuff in the first place, I mean, it just makes sense.
Well, you know, this is as hard as it is. A lot of us have, a lot of us folks involved with Route 66 are romanticists. We have a passion for the empty places we want to see come back to life. We have a passion for the history, the people, but a lot of times to get the state or your local governments involved, it comes down to something cold-blooded, money. And if you can show them the dollars and cents of investing and tapping into this, you get a lot of support.
Yeah, and I mean, as positive as things are here in Oklahoma and as many different groups we have that we're talking to, preservation is still a heavy lift because, again, they're more interested in talking about economic development and sales tax revenue and, you know, the way Route 66 can be leveraged as an icon. And when we come to them and say, hey, if we preserve this old structure, it'll be great for the road. You know, of course, they're supportive, but it just doesn't have quite the same oomph as look at all this business and look how much revenue that it's generating.
Well, and it's a challenge. I mean, you know, some of these buildings and places, how do you justify? And it's a shame we have to think that way. But how do you justify, you take places like Texola. How do you justify spending, say, $1 million to preserve and keep the shell of the old school from falling down in Texola? You know, how does that translate? And having to pick and choose your battles on what you're going to preserve, what you're going to restore. And I think the answer is exactly what you're doing in Tulsa. Creating a sense of community, a sense of community purpose, getting people excited about this project, and linking historic revitalization, repurposing of buildings with economic development.
Yeah, the Ribbon Road up in Miami is a really great example of that. It's such an important piece of Route 66 history. It's unique. There's nothing else like that on the entire stretch. And it's a piece of Route 66 that people literally go out of their way to experience. But with it currently being threatened by the county up there with being destroyed, all of the arguments are, well, so if we save it, you know, what's in it for me, basically? You know, I hate to put it in such cold terms, but, you know, how is that going to invest it? If we pave it differently like this, then we don't have to maintain it. We don't have to spend all this money to do this. Granted, I mean, if you've been on the Ribbon Road, you know it's not really being maintained that well anyway. And so those arguments about preservation tend to always go back to, well, okay, so if we preserve it, if we spend the money to preserve it, how do we get that money back?
Right.
And when you have stretches like that, or the Cyrus Avery Memorial Bridge here in Tulsa, which has a giant price tag to fix, it goes all right back to money. And that's where it becomes difficult.
The Ribbon Road, I'm glad you brought that up because I did want to ask you about that. And it's difficult to have concrete, demonstrable numbers on how that benefits. But you touched on that. That Ribbon Road is a economic lifeline for towns like Afton and Miami. It's people come from all over the world to see this quirky engineering oddity. Why they ever built a highway that's 9 feet wide, I have never gotten a real concrete answer. Pardon the pun. I've never really gotten a concrete answer on that. But that is a very unique piece of highway evolution.
It is. And it's that era when people were still trying to figure out, okay, what's the best way to do this, to pave roads in the first place? You know, the legend, of course, is that they only had enough money to either pave half the road or between Miami and Afton, or the whole thing half as wide. And they decided, well, you know, this is 1922. If two cars happen to bump into each other, one of them can just pull over. But there's been no definitive actual documentation surfaced for that. But like with anything on Route 66, you know, print the legend, right? And it's like when some of these communities come up and say, okay, well, how many tourists travel Route 66? How much money are they spending? It's really difficult to put metrics together. And that's what all of these different entities run off of, is numbers and metrics and something you can analyze and quantify, which makes perfect sense. But when all you have is a spiral-bound notebook in a gift shop somewhere with a bunch of names and countries, you know, it's difficult to translate that to here's exactly how many people are traveling Route 66 this year. But so not everybody's comfortable in that area of, you know, that being a little ambiguous, because obviously you can go into the Blue Whale, or you can go into the powerhouse there. You can go into the powerhouse there and kind of say, okay, well, how much stuff have you guys sold in the gift shop, or things like that. Or you can go and see how many people have stayed in the Wigwam in Holbrook. but none of them tell the complete story. And that's frustrating for some people that aren't used to the way Route 66 kind of operates.
Yeah, it's almost, and I've had this conversation a lot with Marian Pavel of Touch Media, the developer of the Route 66 navigation app. Trying to get concrete numbers is kind of like trying to nail Jell-O to the wall. It's just really not possible. But you can. There's ample evidence, anecdotal evidence, that Route 66 is a major attraction. And some of the things, like the Ribbon Road, and this is a difficult argument to sell, but some things just have to be preserved, even if it's not financially feasible, just because of what they represent historically. And the Ribbon Road is a very unique, tangible link to early automotive highway engineering and development. And for that reason alone, it really should be preserved. How can people, is there anything folks that don't live in Oklahoma can do to help with this preservation?
There is. Thank you for asking. On OklahomaRoute66.com, we have a big header near the top of the page that goes to all this information about what the road is, why it's significant, and the current efforts that the county are trying to push forward to redo it, which will remove all of the authentic historic pavement asphalt there from the lane. We do have a change.org petition link there. And I know people say, oh, well, a petition doesn't do anything. But I know it's being looked at, and those numbers help show that it's not just a couple of guys in a room that say, hey, preservation's important. It's people all over the world that say this road is important. So I would encourage people to go out there to OklahomaRoute66.com, pull up our page on the Ribbon Road, and there's that petition. There are also some links to contact some folks, both in the legislature and in the county. And so if you have the time and the energy, I also encourage you to call, be respectful, send a message and say, hey, this is really important. You know, please don't tear it up. But for folks that are outside of Oklahoma, that petition is probably the best thing, because the bigger that number gets, the more people understand that it isn't, you know, just a group of passionate preservationists that are concerned.
You know, I think a lot of folks in government that are aware of Route 66, but are not intimate, if you will, with the Route 66 community. Things like this petition open eyes on a number of levels. When you start seeing people from Slovakia and Uzbekistan signing a petition for a stretch of asphalt in rural Oklahoma, you know, that's eye-opening. It really is an eye-opening thing. Cheryl says that she's looking forward to you speaking at the Miles of Possibility conference about Oklahoma. And that's going to be the weekend of October 31st in Edwardsville, Illinois. Miles of Possibility conference, folks, is the only conference. It's kind of like the old U.S. Highway 66 Association conventions. It's the only one that really focuses a lot on the business of Route 66. We'll have more information on that, too. Later. There's a question here, how Texola and the watering hole is doing, tumbleweeds.
So that's a good question. Maisel Zimmerman operates the watering hole and tumbleweed grill there in Texola, right on 66. And during the pandemic, she had to close, of course, because there weren't any travelers. And, you know, this, you know, I don't have to get into all that. But so reopening has been very difficult for her. Due to a variety of reasons. And we've been working with her for the last 2 years to help get permits in place, inspections done, paperwork handled with the state. You know, when you're in a community like Texola, it's a little difficult to get things done because you either have to go all the way to Oklahoma City or just know the right people. And so I'm thankful to say that earlier, you know, we had a fundraiser last year that helped raise some money for Maisel to restock and reopen. Early this year, we were able to finally help her get all of her paperwork in order so she can reopen. And then in March, she had knee surgery. So as soon as her recovery is over, she does plan to reopen. She's got what she needs. And as soon as we hear some more specifics on that, we will absolutely share that on social media through the weekly email I send out to all of our association members, you know, everywhere I can to let people know so we can go celebrate and welcome Maisel and the Tumbleweed Grill back to the world of Route 66.
You know, I gotta get, she is the tenacity of she's, God, I tell you, I think if you look in the dictionary under tenacity, you got to see her picture. First of all, opening any business in a town like Texola, that takes some real gumption. And it's kind of even stretching the terminology town, Texola anymore. Hey, and speaking of Maisel and Texola, I just got a book I picked up called Here Today. I don't know if you're familiar with this. Just came out. It's a new release. Here Today, Oklahoma's Ghost Towns, Vanishing Towns, and Towns Persisting Against the Odds by Jeffrey Schmidt. And they've got a section in here on Texola, and they mention the Tumbleweed Grill.
That's great. I've seen it promoted on social media a few times, but I haven't picked it up yet. I'll keep my eyes open for that.
Yeah, I just got a copy of that. There's a few little Route 66 communities in there. Nolan Stoltz is asking if both sections of the Ribbon Road are in danger. The section between Miami and Narcissa, or the lesser known bit into Afton.
Right. So this project currently is only dealing with that northern section closer to Miami. The section down by the college that crosses over I-44 near Afton is not part of this current program, but I know whatever happens to the northern section, the next step is going to be, all right, well, now let's do this to the other section too. So at this moment, the southern section is not being talked about and is not part of the project, but it'll be next on the chopping block, however this is handled.
Boy, I tell you... This is another thing that's unique about the Route 66 community is, you know, other communities, other highways, US 6, 12, 50, they face similar issues with historic preservation, economic development. But Route 66 has a passionate international community to get behind these things. And that really does make a difference. You've got so many exciting things coming down the pipe. I just follow your exploits, Reese, you and your wife, Sam, and I, sometimes I just get exhausted just following the stuff you guys are doing.
I get exhausted being here, so I understand.
I bet you do. I pull up your page sometimes, and you're in Miami today, and then next week you're out in, you know, Eric or some other place out there. Plus, you've got a full-time job. But I, for one, am very appreciative of you both. Because, it's good to see the youngsters taking to this thing. Did you ever think you'd be at your age you'd be called one of the youngsters?
You know, it's and I've said this before. You know, I go into some of these meetings with Route 66 preservationists and efforts and stuff, and I'm still the youngest person in the room. I just turned 43 earlier this month, and you know it. But it gives me energy when I see folks like, again, to return to Miami, there's a gentleman up there named Eli Chenoweth that has a coffee and shaved ice business. He bought the old Marathon station there, made that into a plant shop, and then took an even older station and converted it into his coffee and shaved ice business right next to it. And, you know, he just graduated high school a few years ago. It's always great to see the next generation come in to say this is important, because that just kind of gives you that satisfaction that what I'm doing matters, what I'm doing has an impact, and you know it's not going to go away when I do. So it's just really wonderful.
Yeah, it is. It's really with people like yourself with this infectious enthusiasm and excitement, it keeps us old farts going. Yeah, you know, we get energized by watching and listening and the different perspectives that are so important.
I would be doing him a disservice if I didn't actually mention the business. It's called the Frozen Elephant. So anybody that drives through Miami anytime soon, stop by the Frozen Elephant, say hi to Eli, and get you a cup of coffee and show him how important it is that he's preserving these great old stations.
Well, you can get yourself a buffalo burger up at Whalen's Cuckoo Burger and then wander over there for a good cold shaved ice for dessert.
Yeah, I'm also really happy to report that Waylon has reopened his dining room. It was drive-through only after COVID, and just recently he's reopened the dining room on Friday, Saturdays, and Sundays for people to come in and actually sit down and enjoy a meal, which is great. That was, anytime you have any kind of disruption like that, you always worry that the long time older businesses won't survive. And not all of them did, but it's happy to see that start to lift back up again.
COVID, boy, I tell you, it just knocked the wheels off the bus. And, but you know, there's a silver lining to all these things. Even though COVID really dealt everybody a hard blow along Route 66, I think it also sparked a reawakening of people having an interest in the Great American Road Trip. Because we've largely depended on the Europeans and the internationals have fueled a lot of the Route 66 renaissance. But since COVID, I've seen a dramatic increase in Americans and American families, young with kids, taking to the road.
Agreed. We've seen the same thing here in Oklahoma.
And you've got a pretty big trip coming up this year that, speaking of Route 66, it doesn't just stretch from Chicago to Santa Monica. It stretches from Santa Monica to Prague and a few other places. I'm glad to hear that you guys are going to be getting the goat over to the Route 66, European Route 66 Festival in Prague in August. That's going to be...
I'm very humbled, to that the board, our board here saw fit to invest some of the money that we have into sending me over to the festival with a whole bunch of collateral to hand out to folks to encourage them to make sure they make plenty of time for Oklahoma when they come over to do Route 66.
I'll be posting, several blog posts, but with this program, I'll do a blog post that has the links we've discussed, the businesses we've discussed. And I had a meeting with Dries Bessels a couple weeks ago here in Kingman. I'll be meeting with Zenik Jurisic, one of the organizers of the festival, shortly. And one of the things we've done at every one of the European festivals, we make sure there's an information booth with materials from communities, businesses. And I now have a shipping address that I'll be sharing. So if people want to send materials over to the festival. But it's always best if someone is there in person to glad hand, meet with people, and answer questions. And I think you're a great representative to do that, not just for Oklahoma, but for Route 66 in general.
Thank you. I'm definitely going to need to dig out my Lonely Planet guide so I can learn at least a couple of words to help communicate over there.
God bless. Judy does better than I do with languages. And if nothing else, out of respect, we try to learn a little bit of the language before we go over. And we've done fair with Dutch. I can hold my own with Spanish. I can understand some German and French. When we got into Slovakia, the Czech Republic, and Poland on the last trip, I was as lost as goose in a fog. I had no idea. I couldn't figure it out for the life of me. So I'll be praying for you on that one.
Thank you. You know, something else, that same meeting that we just had with the board, in addition to deciding to invest a little money in sending me over for the European Festival, we also kind of approved a framework for events during the centennial. That's probably the biggest question we're getting from folks that are becoming interested in Route 66 is, all right, what's going to happen in 2026? And so we don't have a lot of the details put together yet, but I am excited to say that we have a couple of idea plans that have been approved that we're now going to dig into and see kind of what the cost is and what partners we can get to help with that so that the association will actually be hosting several events in the centennial year, in addition to participating in the AAA Route 66 Road Fest, which has just become a pretty big deal every June.
Well, you know, and another thing you've got going there, I really like, speaking of setting examples, the way that in Oklahoma, a lot of your events and festivals are developed in a manner that is supportive of people who are investing in businesses in historic districts. I think that's very important.
Agreed.
The Road Fest is... Boy, that's turning into quite an event.
Yeah, when we originally sat down, Ken Busby, who's CEO of the Route 66 Alliance here in Tulsa, and myself joined the folks in AAA a couple of years ago. They said, hey, we want to do a festival. What do you think about that? You know, we had a really nice discussion. And then they said, okay, well, we'll look into it and we'll get back to you. And then they came back like 9-10 months later and said, okay, well, here it is. And it's this huge, amazing event, you know, with a big indoor car show, a bunch of vendors, but the, and, you know, talks like Michael Wallace has come and talked, Brennan Matthews has come and talked, Stephanie Stuckey has come and talked. But the centerpiece is this really amazing walkthrough history of Route 66, where they have these giant modules, not a really sexy word, but these giant kind of exhibits that you walk into the middle of that represent different decades of Route 66's story, that not only include information and artifacts, but local actors in period costume, classic cars, to tell you a little bit about what life was like in the 20s or the 30s or the 40s. And it's just tremendous. It's really hard to describe because there's so much that goes on during the weekend of Roadfest that people just got to come see it for themselves.
Well, you know, I'm looking forward to it. I have yet to attend, and this year I get a chance not only to be there, but I'm coming to beat my gums there. We'll see how that works out. But yeah, I'll be there this year, so I'm kind of excited about that. You know, another great thing that you folks have pulled off in Oklahoma, and I'd be really, really remiss if I didn't mention, talk about setting an example for other communities. You did the Overholser Bridge outside of Oklahoma City. That was preserved. But the Canadian River Bridge, I tell you, that is a great example of what states can do to preserve the unique idiosyncratic nature of these all-important bridges. And boy, that's a tremendous project. You've got a ribbon cutting coming up on that, don't you, pretty soon?
We do, May 10th. So Canadian River Bridge, popularly known as the Pony Bridge or the Bridgeport Pony Bridge, one of the longest bridges on Route 66, and I'm pretty sure it's the longest of its kind on all of Route 66 with just the pony trusses along the side, nearly 4,000 feet long. You know, for years, ODOT, the Department of Transportation here, has been talking about, look, you know, the trucks that cross it are too heavy. It's got some fracture points. We've got to do something. And for years, the solution was either tear it down and just put a plain, boring bridge in its place, or block it off, build a new bridge, and then it's just there as kind of a landmark. And through conversations with ODOT's Cultural Resources Program, with the director of ODOT, who grew up near Route 66 and, you know, was very receptive to ideas, a lot of people, not just the association, but the National Park Service, Historic Bridges Group, National Trust, all these people said, look, there's got to be something that we can do. And so a few years ago, they did kind of a test in the town of Wellston. There's a small bridge there called the Captain Creek Bridge, where they basically took the trusses off the side, rebuilt the bridge to look somewhat similar to what it used to be, but, you know, modern and able to handle today's traffic, and then reattached the trusses to the side so that even though they're not technically handling the weight like they used to, visually it looks very similar to how it always has. And that went really well. It was a great project. And so they basically did the same thing out here in Bridgeport. Took the trusses off, fixed them up, repainted them, removed asbestos from the rivets, all that kind of thing, rebuilt the deck to be 4 feet wider to help support all of the heavy trucks that go across it, but didn't have a severe impact on the kind of the visual aspect of the bridge, and then put the trusses back on. And so on May 10th, we're all going out there celebrating. ODOT's going to give people tours to kind of show the details of the work. And then we'll have a few speeches and then have a nice ribbon cutting and crossing the bridge and reopening that significant Route 66 landmark. And, you know, I know people that are strict preservationists, you know, would have liked to have seen the bridge saved. And of course, if there was the ability to do that and allow people to still travel it, preservation is always, you know, what we push for. But when it comes to needing to compromise, this is about as good as it could get.
You can't, you know, we have to keep in mind, Route 66 has always been evolutionary. The Route 66 of 1930 was not the Route 66 of 1950 or 1960. And the Canadian River Bridge there, that is a prime example of how you can have your cake and eat it too. And preserving these bridges, it really is important to preserving the nature of the Route 66 experience. And if you mentioned the other option was just close the bridge and build another one next to it. With all the interest in bicycling Route 66, I'm surprised that some of these bridges are not being preserved in that manner as part of a bicycle corridor. That's kind of what I'm hoping will happen with the Gaskin Aid Bridge in Missouri. Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know just recently, Route 66 here in Oklahoma was designated as an official U.S. bike trail. So I know those kinds of things also open up the ability for some federal funding and things like that when those kinds of designations are made. Kind of like, you know, nonprofits are able to apply for certain grants, whereas private businesses aren't. So it remains to be seen what comes from that. But we got signs going up for that now, and I'm sure as things progress and as we get beyond the centennial, that will hopefully just continue to increase.
Well, I hope so. And I do hope that folks that are looking to get involved with preservation initiatives or use Route 66 as a catalyst for preservation, economic development in their communities. I hope they'll evaluate the Oklahoma Route 66 Association, the projects in Tulsa, and find a little inspiration and some templates for some successful programs that are not only have worked, but are working. And you mentioned compromise. That's a very big part of this, is the ability to compromise. I get a kick out of the strict preservationist. They want everything as it was, but yet they're not willing to cross the Mojave Desert without their air conditioner. You know, how far are we going to go with this authenticity, folks?
Yeah, I mean, and you can't win them all. You know, there's another bridge that's currently under review right now near Catoosa, formerly the Twin Bridges. One bridge was already removed off there near Bird Creek and the Verdigris River. And the other bridge looks like it's the same thing's going to happen, that there's just, when you're dealing with the through truss where you're actually driving through the structure instead of with it being on the sides, it's not really possible to widen or do anything with that. And so I know that that's something we're having the same conversations with ODOT and the other groups in charge of that. That's probably not going to have a happy ending like the Bridgeport Bridge does. But we join the calls, we write letters, we encourage that. And if there's absolutely any way to preserve the bridge in place or find somewhere where that bridge can continue to be enjoyed with some kind of historic character and interpretation, you know, we'll push for that. But you know, when you have a big victory like the Bridgeport Bridge, it's nice to stop and celebrate, but there's always another fight on the horizon.
Well, we're not gonna, you know, it's a tragedy, but we cannot preserve everything. We just can't. It's just not feasible. Preserve what we can, and you know, recreate where possible and adapt to changing times to the best of our ability. Keep things moving. It's, you know, we've lost a lot of things. The bridge out there at Afton, that very unique bridge that was there. Yeah. You know, it's a shame, but we're just not going to be able to save everything. But the Canadian River Bridge, my goodness, my friends, that is an example that it can be done and can be done successfully. And I hope people look towards that.
And it just goes back into partnerships and making sure that you have a voice at the table when these projects come up. Because if it hadn't been for all of these advocacy groups all speaking with one voice, the story would have ended much differently.
Well, got one more question for you, and I won't tie you up. I know you. I sure appreciate you taking time from your schedule this morning to do this. And this is a can of worms we can open. Brady sent a question about, we hear a lot about what's going on in Tulsa, but what about Oklahoma City?
So that is a really good question. Thank you, Brady. You know, Oklahoma City for the longest time has been seen as something of a black hole when it comes to Route 66. And part of that is the victim of the bigger town, like we were talking about earlier, where, you know, it's had so many alignments and there's no real strong Route 66 identity. And so people just kind of bypass it. And so then the city doesn't invest in it because they don't really see those travelers. There's no big landmark. You know, you've got like the milk bottle building that people take pictures of, but there's nowhere to kind of capture those folks. I am happy to say that a lot of the city's districts are starting to come together to promote Route 66. The 39th Street District is a really good example of a bunch of business owners and folks in the community leaning into their unique cultural identity there. It's a very LGBTQ pro neighborhood. It was a safe space back in the 70s and 80s when other parts of the city weren't as welcoming. And so it has an identity that is very obvious once you get to that part of town, with some really amazing murals and some signage, and Route 66 is kind of everywhere. because they're happy to be a part of that greater American story. The city itself had an initiative just recently to install a whole bunch of new signs because, you know, what's, you know, if you can't find Route 66, it's going to be difficult to really, you know, promote it and enhance it, which has helped encourage a lot of businesses that are on 66 to say, oh, wait a minute, I guess I am part of Route 66, and encouraging them to develop, to lean into that. So there's not any like giant, here's a big project there. I mean, there are several that have been submitted for this new grant, like a neon sign park the Oklahoma Historical Society is hoping to build, and a few other things. But there's some organization happening there, both at the city level and at the individual business level, that makes me really excited for the next couple of years of Route 66 in Oklahoma City.
Excellent. You mentioned, you know, one more thing. I know we're running a little bit late here, but you mentioned the American story. Yeah, this is another thing that really excites me about Route 66. And, you know, I don't know exactly when Route 66 morphed from highway to a stage, if you will, where the American story unfolds and shares. But the Greenwood District is another great example of how we can weave even, because America's story isn't, I don't mean this derogatory or I don't know how to put it, but it's not always black and white. It's a rich tapestry, and tragedy is part of the American story. And recognition of the Greenwood District and preservation, monuments, things of that nature, I think that adds another dimension to the story of Route 66 as well.
I agree. I mean, in the Greenwood area is one block off of the original alignment of Route 66. You know, and it's kind of like we talk about people that are strict preservationists. You also have folks that are strict, you know, curb to curb. You know, they're not interested in anything that's not literally on frontage on original Route 66. But if you restrict yourself to that, you miss the story of Greenwood. You miss like the Woody Guthrie Museum. You miss First Americans Museum in Oklahoma City, which is a relatively new, amazing place that showcases a little bit about Oklahoma's 39 tribes that have nations here in Oklahoma, that are all part of this greater story. That's, you know, not all sunshine and rainbows, but it's important because as the phrase goes, you know, those that forget history are doomed to repeat it. And, you know, especially in First Americans Museum in Oklahoma City, there's a great section dedicated to misrepresentation of Native American culture with, you know, the classic American road trip. And so it's just got some examples of some just really interesting products and marketing initiatives and things from the 40s, 50s, 60s, and so on that show how Native American culture was presented to the general American traveler. You know, one of my big focuses over the next year or two with the association is helping give an outlet for the 14 Native tribes that have that Route 66 touches in the state to tell their story if they want to, starting with, the, you know, up in Northeast Oklahoma and all the way out to Texola. So that's, you know, the new edition of our trip guide that just came out has a page that talks about those 14 nations very generally and gives a QR code that people can scan that takes you to a web page that we're building out so that people can learn more about the Native American culture that makes Oklahoma unique.
That's very good. You know, this is an exciting era because we're actually having these conversations. And, you know, for a long time, we just kind of swept this under the carpet. And it's very easy with Route 66. We start to see it in the context of America's longest theme park. And we see it in the context of neon and tail fins. And it's such, there's so much more to it. It's so much richer. The Native American situation is another chapter, like you say, that's been largely overlooked. I've got to dig it up somewhere. And my pa passed away a couple of years ago, and we traveled Route 66. Our first trip west was in 59, and my dad took a bunch of pictures. I've got a film reel I've got to get digitized. But one of the pictures I have here is a trading post. I was very young. I don't remember, but it's somewhere around, the landscapes look like around Gallup. And it's a big billboard along the highway. You can see the trading post in the background. see live rattlesnake, see live jackrabbit, and the bottom one is a big banner. It says see live Indian. Mm. Like they were zoo animals. God. Yep, changing times.
Indeed.
Reese, again, thank you, not just for taking time this morning, but for your dedication to Route 66, carrying it forward to a new generation, into the centennial and beyond. Your hard work and your dedication really is greatly appreciated. And
well, Jim, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to talk about what we're doing here in Oklahoma, because again, the hope is that it inspires other communities and it connects other people. Again, for me, it always goes back to relationships, you know, someone to say, hey, how did you do that? Or, hey, was that successful? Or here's an idea that I have, so that we can kind of share and, you know, a rising tide lifts all boats. So it's really a pleasure.
Well, like Michael Wallace said, it is a linear community. And from that perspective, Tulsa and Kingman are just one of the quirky neighborhoods in that linear community. And those neighborhoods working together, that's what it takes.
That's right.
Reese, thank you so very much.
I'll see you in June.
Yeah, June. I will be there, barring accidental death or dismemberment. I will be headed in that direction. Say hello to Sam for me.
I sure will.
Well, we're going to have some fun. Next week, we're going to wander out to McLean, Texas, and we're going to talk to Angela Moreland, who's she's kind of taking the reins, if you will, and picking up with Delbert True and building on what he and his family have started and others. And we're going to be talking about some great, exciting projects in McLean, Texas, next week. And then we'll be talking to Brady Wilson about some things happening in Texas in general, including the Bug Ranch upcoming Route 66 Festival. And then I have something fascinating coming up for mid-May. I'll be posting more details. I have a gentleman that has, for lack of a better word, cast aside your preconceived notions about what electric vehicles do, what they can do, and what they are, because we're going to be talking to a fella who has spent a few years traveling with his Tesla on some great road trips, including to all the Indian reservations in Arizona in a Tesla. That should be kind of entertaining. We'll have the whole schedule up here pretty soon. If you're going to be in Kingman area this next weekend, it's the annual Route 66 Fund Run. This is one of the older events on Route 66, always a great deal of fun. The best way to describe this is the veil between past and present is torn down and thrown away for the weekend, because Route 66 for about 160 miles in western Arizona is transformed into a living time capsule. You get to experience Route 66 as it was, complete with traffic congestion and fun. And it's a great, exciting event. If you can attend, drop me a note. We're going to have just a simple combination family reunion and meet and greet down at Calico's Restaurant on Saturday afternoon at 4. Mike Ward has graciously offered to dust off something we haven't done in years. He used to host an e-group breakfast at these events with a raffle. And we're going to do that at Calico's. We're going to be raffling off all kinds of stuff, t-shirts from along the road, visitors' guides, some antique postcards, all kinds of stuff. So if you can join us, it'll be a great meet and greet. And they've got great food, so we can have, we got a room reserved so we can have a private bar. We'll have a nice dinner and a great chance to visit with old friends. And you can drop me a note. I'll get you details on that. But next weekend is the Route 66 Fun Run. I'm working with Bob Bowes Bell of True West Magazine on an interesting project. The 66 Kids. Bob is best known for his music, his sense of humor, and his artwork, and of course, True West Magazine. But Route 66 is, like with me, that's his foundation. His father owned gas stations along Route 66 here in western Arizona, and Bob grew up on Route 66. And a few years ago, he put out a book about the 66 Kid. Well, now he's expanded that into a website, a podcast, a new book, The 66 Kids, and Route 66 Roadshow, The 66 Kids Roadshow. And the first one will be Friday, the 24th of May in Prescott, Arizona. We're going to have some great music, some old bands that used to play along Route 66. And, of course, Bob and I'll be telling tall tales. And the state's official historian, Marshall Trimble, is supposed to be there. He grew up in Ash Fork, Arizona, on Route 66, but he's been having some health issues. And so that waits to be seen. But we'll be at the historic Elks Lodge, downtown Prescott, Arizona, on that Friday evening. So that should be a real hoot. It's going to be free. And we'll be down there signing books and telling people where to go. Mentioned the AAA Road Fest. I will be there. The best way to do this is if you check out our website, jimhinckleysamerica.com. I have a full schedule of my appearances, where I'm going to be. I've been talking to the folks in Grants, New Mexico. They've asked that perhaps I do something in June on the way to Tulsa. Do a presentation there and help promote the wonderful mining museum in Grants, New Mexico. And I'll have more details on that soon. And of course, I will be at the Miles of Possibility Conference in October. I've received a lot of inquiries about the European Route 66 Festival. The answer to that is, I don't know. Judy and I have participated in all of them to date. So we'd like to attend. We plan on attending, but it's still a big question mark. I think that kind of brings us up to date. I want to give a shout out to some of the folks who make this program really possible, and I'm grateful. Of course, our crowdfunding initiative on Patreon is key to development of our educational programs, since most of those are nonprofit or free, and we try to donate as much of our time as we can to those programs. But we also have some great sponsors like Route Trip USA. They are like us. They test the pillows and taste the enchiladas and tell people where to go. Great road trips in the United States and Canada. Our friends out at the Roadrunner Lodge Motel in Tucumcari, New Mexico. Uranus Fudge Company and General Store. I don't even know what to say about that place, except it's a lot of fun. And then Connie Eccles out at the Wagon Wheel Motel in Cuba, Missouri, the oldest continuously operated motel on Route 66. And Cactus Inn Motel and RV Park in McLean, Texas. I want to thank you. When we recommend a business, we're kind of picky about this because my name's on the line, and that's the only thing I've really got that's worth a damn. And so I'm really picky on who I tie that name to. And I like to work with people who are like-minded, share my passion for the people, the Route 66 community. And I like to work with those kind of folks like Reese and Sam Martin and folks there at Uranus Fudge Company. So, my friends, I hope you've enjoyed this today. Check out our website, jimhinckleysamerica.com. And, we'll do this again next week. And same time, is everybody kind of enjoyed this today? I hope. Let's wrap this up with we'll bid adios with some music from Joe and Woody and my friends there with the Road Crew 66, some tremendous road trip music. Take care, my friends. Reese, again, thank you. And adios, people. We will see you next week.
Say hello to a new friend on an old road. Take a two-lane trip of memories into mysteries unknown. Come along for the ride, Jim Hinckley. is America. Jim Hinckley is America.
One more update. It looks like I-40 over towards Grants, towards Gallup, the Arizona state line, is still closed as of last evening. I will try to get some updates on that. There's a train derailment, and it's created quite a mess out that way with a detour down to Highway 60 or north up through Window Rock. And those old two-lane roads out through the reservation and... Boy, I tell you, they're not set up for the kind of traffic that I-40 carries. So if you're traveling that direction, be prepared for some delays and be careful. My friends, until we meet again, vaya con Dios. Adios, mi amigos.